WBFY LP 100.9, Belfast, Maine.
Hello, hello, it's Ellen Sander, host of Poetry Woodshed Radio. Not your ordinary poetry hour full of readings, recordings, spoken word, commentary, quirk, and quintessential poetry love. For the connoisseur and the merely curious, we have the classics, the contemporaries, the beats, the geeks, the jammers, and the slammers. So join us right here on WBFY.
Poetry Woodshed's hours are Wednesday at 7 p.m. and Saturday at 11 a.m.
Support for Belfast Community Radio comes from our listeners and from the Old Professor's Bookshop, a Harvard Square bookstore in downtown Maine, featuring a unique selection of scholarly and rare new and used books, located at 99 Main Street, open 10 to 4 most days.
Welcome to Books and Writers, a masterclass in how to be a better, more successful writer. I'm your host, Spencer Stevens. We talk with people who know books and publishing, writers, writing teachers, editors, publishers, booksellers. We demystify the process of getting published and getting noticed. On Books and Writers, you can learn about book launches, finding literary agents, winning awards, writing dialogue for characters who are even smarter than you are, thinking like an entrepreneur. Books and Writers is inspiration and education for writers in all stages of their careers. Our guest this week on Books and Writers is Deborah K. Shepherd. Deborah K. Shepherd was born in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and spent much of her early life in the New York area. Before retiring in 2014, she was a social worker with a primary focus on the prevention of domestic violence and sexual assault, also on the provision of victim services. During an earlier career as a reporter, she wrote for a publication called Show Business in New York City and for the Rojan Independent, a weekly newspaper in Columbia County, New York. She also freelanced as a travel writer. Deborah graduated from the Interlochen Arts Academy in Interlochen, Michigan, and holds a BFA in drama from the University of Arizona, also a master's in social work from the Fordham University Graduate School of Social Service. Deborah lives with her husband and two rescue dogs on the Maine coast, where she gardens, swims, and cooks. She blogs at DeborahShepherdWrites.com. You can find her on Facebook at Deborah K. Shepherd /author. Deborah is at work on a memoir. Deborah K. Shepherd is the author of So Happy Together, a book published in April 2021 by She Writes Press. So Happy Together is a novel about a woman stuck in a stultifying marriage that's unraveling and is mourning the loss of her creative self. She has a dream about an old lover and goes on a road trip in search of what she once had and maybe what she once was. Deborah K. Shepherd, author of So Happy Together, welcome to Books and Writers. We're so happy to have you with us today. Happy to chat about So Happy Together and to learn more about your book, which was published in April of this year.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Let's talk first about So Happy Together. As I understand it, and I've read a little bit of the book, it tells the story of a married woman who's in a stifling marriage and has a nightmare about an old lover, and she sets off on a road trip to capture, if she can, what maybe she once had. And I'm curious about what, if anything, our protagonist is looking for. What does she, in particular, hope to find?
Well, I think a lot of us get to, particularly women, get to midlife and wonder about some of the choices we made, especially if we're not happy with the choices we've made. And in the book, the protagonist not only wonders about it and ruminates, she actually has an opportunity to get in her car and set off after this old lover and see if in fact, an old love, and see if, in fact, things might be different this time.
Sure, sure. And before she leaves, do we get a sense for whether her hopes are realistic or whether she might be a little pie in the sky or something else?
You know, she's not sure, and I want to leave the readers that way as well.
Sure.
So, they go along on the road trip with her and discover for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And can you give us a sense in terms of the reader's emotions, what they're likely to experience? Is it an exciting road trip? Is it fraught with difficulty? Is it filled with with hope and lust? Can you give us a general sense of where she goes?
I think all of the above.
Okay.
You know, it's a story. The story is about love and loss and friendship and forgiveness and acceptance, and she goes through a lot of emotions on this road trip west. The book is set in the 80s with flashbacks to the 60s, to her college years, and so you get some of both over the 4 or 5 days of the road trip.
Okay.
So it's in that part is in real time.
Okay. And can you give us some ideas where your story came from? What was your inspiration?
Sure. In the late 1980s, I was married with two kids, a teenager and a tween, and my marriage was unraveling, and I had a full-time job, and at night, after everybody was asleep, I set up my word processor on the kitchen table and wrote, and, you know, sort of took my fantasies of what if I had made a different choice and put them into my protagonist's brain, and she actually acted on. I didn't. I just wrote about it.
So it sounds like there might have been a writing the book might have been, to some degree, a flight of fancy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes. And it sounds like it might have been kind of fun as well. It took you away from parts of reality that might not have been ideal.
I think it was fun, and I think, you know, it was just something I felt I had to do, and it worked for me up to a point. I wrote that book on a word processor, finished the manuscript, and had no idea, because I wasn't a writer, had no idea what to do next, and we didn't have the World Wide Web at that point where you could look up anything, so I just printed up the manuscript and put it in a box and found a publisher in, you know, one of those books that I had purchased about where to get your book published, and sent it off, and of course it came back in the same box I'd sent it in. So I realized I wasn't a writer at that point, and put it in a carton and put it in the back of my closet, not to be reopened. And then the rest is that 30 years later, I unearthed it.
Sure. So
yeah.
The manuscript sat gathering dust for over 30 years, and
yep.
And at some point, something made you pull it out and explore it again. What was that?
Well, I took a class with Maine writers and publishers, and I thought I would write a novel, and I started taking notes for a new novel, and I spoke to my husband about it, and he said, you know that piece of juvenilia you put in the closet 30 years ago? He said, maybe why don't you pull it out and see if there's anything in there that you can put in this new book, and then you wouldn't have to write as much. So for once I took his advice and pulled it out of the closet and read it and realized it was not so bad after all.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to rewrite it anyway because it was, you know, I had to put it on the computer, and I edited it and came up with something that I thought was at least workable.
Mm-hmm. You realize, of course, that most writers, when they put something in the drawer for a period of time, go back to it and find it amateurish or needing complete changing. You must have been perhaps a little overjoyed or excited even to discover it was something that you were still pleased with.
Yes, for the most part. I mean, I realize, obviously, I've had life experience since then and had written a lot more, had a job that required a lot of writing, and but knew it was fixable.
Mm-hmm. And how long did the fixing process go on before you went looking for a publisher?
Well, I would say about a year and a half. And in that period, I took another class with Maine writers and publishers. And it was called Point of View. And in that class, I met the person who became my developmental editor. And I worked with her for about 6 months. And mostly it was on structure. Because the voice was okay, but the structure, you know, I needed help finding the emotional core, and I needed I needed to find an inciting incident, which I didn't even know what it was until she told me. And so things, you know, it's things like that. And so we worked, as I said, we worked together for about 6 months. And then I started sending out the first 10 pages to agents.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly I didn't hear anything, but I also got some, this is good, but sorry, it's not right for us. And then there was one, I did a pitch with agents in Portland, and one agent said, I really like this, but I don't represent historical fiction. And I said, well, wait a minute, this isn't historical fiction. This is like the 60s to the 80s. This is my life. And she said, in publishing, it's historical fiction. So anyway, I'm glad I sent it out to agents, and eventually was not accepted by any of them, and so wasn't able to go the traditional publishing route, which is hard for new writers.
Mm-hmm.
And also knew that I couldn't do self-publishing because I'm such a technophobe. So again, Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance came to my rescue and had a round table about different types of publishing, and I learned about hybrid publishing and eventually decided to go that way, and that worked for me.
Sure. Now, but before you sent your manuscript out to any agents, I'm curious who at that point had read the manuscript and had offered comments. There was you, of course, and your developmental editor. Anybody
right.
else?
I had three beta readers as well.
Okay, so you had a sense from those four persons plus you about what issues or what strengths you might have contained in your manuscript.
Right, and I read it over and over again to my husband every time I made a change. So that's why I dedicated the book to him.
God bless him, and God bless you both.
But anyway, yeah. So he also was very helpful. So I guess I've had four beta readers then.
Sure, sure, and I have heard many cases where sharing the book with agents or folks in the publishing industry will shed a lot of light on how people will perceive your manuscript. It sounds like you might have gotten some of that as well in the process.
Yeah, not very detailed, I have to say. You know, mostly it was thank you, but no thank you.
Sure.
Except for the couple of agents that I actually pitched directly.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Well, you had at least one who said, I think this is historical fiction. You had somebody categorize it for you, which
right.
is probably a pretty significant moment, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, realizing your life is history, right?
Yeah. When,
you know, my perception of historical fiction is somewhere in the Cotswolds, you know, and Jane Eyre and everybody. That's historical fiction to me. So I had to sort of rethink that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I've since had a review from Historical Novels Review, looked at the book, and I've joined some Facebook groups for historical fiction writers.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And tell me about the reception you've gotten since you released the book. It sounds like you've gotten a lot of praise and a lot of appreciation for what you've put together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got a good Kirkus review. I've gotten some other sort of editorial reviews, and then you know, the big thing after you get a book published is people need to know about it, and so you do a lot of events and writing and things like that, and so what you need is reviews, and it's very hard for me, especially I guess as an introvert, and I think a lot of writers are introverts,
mm-hmm.
to ask people to review your book, you know, but I guess that's how you sell books.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So this is the much tougher part for me than the writing, it turned out.
Yes. And this tougher part, the publicizing of your book, did you pursue this on your own, or did your publisher cooperate or encourage you in any way?
Well, my publisher, she writes press, and as I said, it's a hybrid press. But the publicizing and the marketing of the book is something that you have to find somebody and hire to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the case with a lot of publishing. And so the publisher made some recommendations, and one of the people on that list was also recommended by a fellow writer. And when I interviewed the publicist, I felt very compatible with her, and it worked. So
sure.
she did publicizing for me, and I also worked a little bit with a social media consultant, which was also very helpful.
Wonderful. And let's talk, I want to go back to your publisher in a minute. I'm curious about your work with them, but while we're on the topic of your publicist, tell us a little about how that worked and how challenging and unique that was as an experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, first she sent, you know, after we agreed to work together, she sent out a questionnaire, and I filled it out in terms of, you know, some affiliations I had, some, you know, geographical, where I'd grown up, where I went to school, where I live now, so that she could zero in on different media markets, things like that. So that was very detailed, and then she came back with a list of places and sites where she thought it would be advisable to pitch the book,
mm-hmm.
which she did, and a lot of them accepted the book, and I did radio interviews and blog posts, and there were little bits in alumni magazines and publications and newspapers, and so yeah, that's how that worked.
Okay.
Initially, and then, you know, she set me up with the interviewer, with the interviews, a lot of them, and things like that.
Sure. I'm curious again about the work of the publicist. Were there any areas where you and the publicist disagreed about whether you should pursue a particular avenue, a particular outlet, or a particular idea?
There were a couple that she pitched to me where I just didn't feel like I had the bandwidth to, you know, like essay writing and things like that, that I didn't have. But although I did write several essays that she had pitched, and they were very successful, but there were a couple where I said, I don't think so.
Yes.
And that was fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the relationship between you and your publicist was some give and take. You each made a mm-hmm. contribution, and you each had certain limits, I suppose.
Right. And one of the things was, you know, I was more reticent about certain things. She said to me, well, this is literary fiction, and I never saw it as literary fiction, so I didn't want to aim for those markets.
Mm-hmm.
But she convinced me to at least a couple of them. So I did, and some of them were successful.
Okay. As you look at the book now, I mean, would you categorize it as either literary fiction or as historical fiction or as something else?
Well, I mean, I was looking at it as women's fiction, but I've had some good feedback from men. So, you know, I think it's just fiction, and I hope people think it's a good read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think these categories can, there are gray areas. And I think it's really hard to pigeonhole some books.
Yes, sure. And some books will cross genres, too. Some books
mm-hmm.
will have
mm-hmm.
characteristics of more than one genre that will broaden their appeal a little bit. It sounds like maybe So Happy Together might fall in that category.
Right. And you know, if you're not looking at, for instance, the category of romance novels, it is a romance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with lowercase
yes.
romance, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it veers into that territory as well. I just hope people think it's a good read.
Yeah, sure. It sounds like it might be the kind of read that you could enjoy either on vacation or as a light escapism. It doesn't involve, like, violence or the supernatural or things like that.
No, but I think sometimes when you say light and escapism, then you also pigeonhole it. So, you know, let's just call it a good read.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay.
I didn't mean to try to find
no,
a whole...
I
yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay, all right. And
I mean, if you want to read it on the beach, you know, if you still want to go to the beach in September and you want to read it on the beach, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure. Okay. And before you sat down 35 years ago, or however long ago it was
mystery, right?
Okay. Before you sat down for the first time to write the book, did you have writing experience before then, or was this brand new territory for you?
Well, I was actually a newspaper reporter on a rural, a weekly rural newspaper in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I did all kinds of things on that. I wrote, you know, I wrote feature articles. I had a column. I covered, I used to take the police scanner home at night. And so I covered when all the barns were being burned down by an arsonist, that kind of thing in the middle of the night. I also covered town meetings and high school things and 50th anniversary parties. I was also the photographer. So it was a little bit of everything and a lot of fun. So I did sort of hone my writing there and learn to write succinctly, because that was back in the day when we actually had a typesetter and anything that didn't fit on the page got cut off at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned quickly that I didn't want my articles cut off.
Sure. I've heard about so many writers, present company included, I'm thinking of myself here for a moment, who started out their professional lives as journalists or spent part of their professional life in journalism. And it sounds like that was, in many cases, it's a very helpful experience for someone who becomes a writer. It sounds like it certainly was in your case.
Mm-hmm. It was. I didn't know I was going to become a writer, you know, author. And in fact, the stories that I enjoyed writing the most had to do with social justice and advocacy. And eventually I decided to go back to school and get an MSW and became a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to do a lot of writing in that job as well, because I did administration.
Sure, sure. I'm going to back up for a second and talk about the publicity again, because that's a topic that I know a lot of our listeners will be interested in. If you've written a book, trying to get attention for it, getting publicity that will help, it's a challenge. There's a lot of choices you got to make, and you have to operate in an area where you may not have a lot of experience. I think most writers have trouble with that area. Can you tell us a little about how you got reviews for your book, what steps you took, and which ones you thought were most helpful?
Well, I think a lot of the reviews were were through my publicists, for instance, Kirkus and NetGalley, and some of the bigger ones, Reader's Favorite, things like that. Others I sent out myself. I have a group of writers, women writers, who we're on a Facebook group together from the publisher, and a lot of us, you know, support each other that way in terms of seeking reviews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ask my friends, ask my family. They're getting tired of me asking.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know. And then there's, you know, you have to be. Unfortunately, Amazon controls a lot of the ups and downs of your book. And you know, if you get a certain number of reviews, apparently they pay more attention and put you in a better place somewhere on their, you know, on mm-hmm. their list, whatever. So it's a real learning experience for me. It's discouraging at times, but I believe in my book, and so I'm going to do what I have to do.
Sure. Among the different avenues for seeking out and securing reviews for your book, online reviews, which ones did you personally feel the best about and did you feel were most effective?
You know, it's hard for me to figure that out, because, you know, you can get a good review on Amazon, and does that translate into sales? Who knows?
Sure.
You know, you could take an ad on Amazon and you get a lot of clicks, but did they buy your book? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, was it that particular cause and effect?
Sure. I was thinking more just in terms of getting the reviews themselves, not linking the reviews to sales.
Oh, okay.
What's the best way to get reviews, at least in your experience?
Okay, so my publicist suggested I have a book blog review tour, and I'm she gave me a couple of different ones, and I went to their websites and picked one that sounded like most compatible with me, and so I did pay for this. So what happens is the person who whose blog it is, mm-hmm. has a group of reviewers, and she puts your book out there and says, does anybody want to review this book? And you get about 10 or 12 people reviewing the book. I think that was the most helpful for me.
Mm-hmm.
I got some really good reviews, and then some of them were put on Goodreads, but some of them, the idea is that they put it on your blog, and I mean their blog, and they have a lot of followers, so hopefully a lot of followers will take their recommendations and buy your book,
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
then maybe review it, you know, for themselves.
Yes, okay. And let's talk about your publisher, She Writes Press. They they focus predominantly on female writers, and you mentioned that they're a hybrid publisher. Tell us, what's your understanding of that phrase, hybrid publisher? What does that mean?
Well, it's a cooperative. It means that the author has certain responsibilities, for one thing, an input of cash at the beginning. And then the writer, the publisher will and obviously publish, print and publish your book, distribute your book through Ingram, and design a beautiful cover, and will publicize to an extent where they publicize all their books.
Sure.
But it's traditional distribution. You get in their catalog, and they're very, very helpful in terms of steering you in different or in the right direction,
mm-hmm.
For getting the book out there. So it worked for me. Did it cost money? Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We make choices about how we spend our money, right?
So exactly.
I'm not traveling. This past year and a half, nobody traveled. Nobody went out to dinner. Nobody bought a new car.
Right.
This is how I spent my money.
Yeah. Well, you're in very good company, I'd say, Deborah. A lot of us spent the last year and a half sitting at home eating in front of the TV set.
Right. And some of us wrote.
Yes.
So yep. Yeah. So I'm writing a second book now too.
Wonderful. Is there anything you can tell us about that, or is that still in the formative stage?
It's in the formative stage. It's a memoir.
Okay.
This time.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Back on your publisher. Was there an editing and review process? And if so, how did that work?
Yes. Well, this particular publisher has three tracks. One is a green light, one is a yellow light, one is a red light, I guess. So the green light, you're sort of good to go, basically. So I had a developmental edit, and then I had a copy edit, person that my developmental editor recommended. So mine was ready to go, except for proofing,
mm-hmm.
and it was accepted that way. If you get accepted under the yellow light track, then you need to have some developmental editing and or copy editing. I guess the red light is, go back and sorry, we won't take it.
Yeah.
So I was very lucky to go through the green light because I had already had a developmental edit and a copy edit.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay. And how long did that process last, and how challenging was it?
The publishing process was like about a year and a half, because they had so many people ahead of me, I guess, who were getting published, and it took that long also because there, you did a proof and you had to read it and you had to approve a copy, and they sent a cover. They sent me 9 different covers, and at first glance, I hated every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But wisely decided not to email them back immediately, and sat with the covers for a while. And eventually one of them stood out for me, and I realized that the cover artist had captured the whole book in the cover.
Mm-hmm.
It was phenomenal to me. So
mm-hmm.
That's the one I chose.
Wonderful. That's got to be an excellent moment when you see cover art and it fits in your mind the image of what you were hoping for.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say, She Writes Press has beautiful covers.
Mm-hmm.
And although, you can't judge a book by its cover, it's the first thing you see, obviously, when you walk into a bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, I get the impression that cover art matters a great deal when it comes to sales. And
yep.
People actually do judge a book by the cover, at least to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy with mine.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay. Let's talk about your experience that may have tied into your book. When we talked before the interview, I think you had indicated that your experience as a social worker may have had some influence on the book and how it looked when you finally got it published. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah. Actually, when I first wrote the book, I wasn't a social worker. I was, as I said, a newspaper reporter. But when I rewrote the book, I put in some chapters and scenes that, if not directly influenced by my social work career, certainly had some informed mm-hmm. Some of the things I wrote about. So I spent my career as a director in two different places. One, I was the director of the statewide agency for rape crisis centers, and then the second one, from which I retired, I was the director of the domestic violence program in Kennebec and Somerset counties here in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, your experience working with women in difficult circumstances, I would guess, might have affected the main character of your book, a woman who was in difficult circumstances, dealing with her relationship with her husband and her family.
Right. Well, actually, my protagonist was not in an abusive relationship.
Okay.
But she was in an unhappy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, one of the other main characters in the book did at one point divulge to the main character that he had been sexually assaulted as a child. And I think, not taking anything directly from anybody I had worked with as a social worker, but it was a compilation of a number of stories I had heard. And I wrote the three pages. I was very clear on what I was writing, and I was very in tune to survivors of abuse, obviously from my career. And then I wondered about what I had written, because he did divulge this assault in some detail, and I rewrote it from the point of view of the protagonist hearing it, and nothing, it didn't sit right. It didn't work. And then I heard this other character, his name is Peter, saying to me, you need to write it the way I told it, because it's my story. I'm finally able to talk about it, and nobody is going to shut me down again, not even you, author. So I went back to my original scene, and that's what's in the book.
Okay. Any experience, I'm going to guess, where you're dealing with human conflict, human emotion, is one that if you're paying attention, you can learn from and benefit from as a writer. It sounds like you would buy into that idea.
Oh yeah, we all have these experiences because we're human. Or we all know somebody who had experiences like this, and the difference is that writers write about them,
mm-hmm.
But everybody can identify, I think.
Sure. back to I'm jumping around a little bit, and I'm sorry, but I'm again interested. I'm again interested in your publicist, we didn't say so specifically, but I'm going to guess you wrote a check to your publicist to have that person work with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, this has been, even people who are published with the big five traditional publishers pay money for publicists. I mean, unless there's somebody like, Stephen King or a big name. If you're a new writer, you're gonna need to find some of these things on your own.
Yeah.
To pay for them.
Okay. And it sounds like you did interviews, sort of like the one that we're doing now. I'm curious, did you go through any process to prepare for that, to anticipate the questions you might have, to groom yourself a little bit for speaking in public?
Well, before I was a newspaper reporter, I was an actress.
Oh, no
so
kidding.
I was a drama major in college. So I know a little bit about public speaking. And then as a director of an agency, I had to do a lot of public speaking. But specifically in terms of the interviews, a lot of the interviewers had websites, and, you know, I did some podcasts, so I listened to podcasts, previous podcasts that they had done, and broadcasts that they had done. So I was pretty aware of the kinds of questions they asked.
Sure. Okay. I will confess to you that in my own efforts at marketing books that I've written, I got interviewed on video, and when I saw one of the video interviews, I was shocked at how dour and serious I sounded. And I'm wondering if you had any moments of where you gained some self-knowledge and had to find reason to adjust maybe how you approach the process.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, because years and years ago, when I in my first social work position, I was in New York and interviewed on TV, and it was about a horrific child abuse situation. And my daughter, who was a teenager at the time, viewed the tape, and she basically said, "You know, Mom, you were smiling the whole time you were talking about this awful." And she goes, "Hi, I'm Deborah Shepherd. I've never been on TV before." So I kind of learned from that one to sort of not, you know, so to sort of set your face in an appropriate way.
Yeah.
But just, you know, be animated, but be aware of what the subject matter.
Sure. Your mood and the mood that you convey has to be somewhere in the same ballpark as the subject you're speaking about.
Exactly. Yeah. And that very first one years ago, I was obviously so nervous that I came across in a very inappropriate way.
Yeah, it's very curious what you can learn about yourself if you see yourself on video or you hear yourself on tape, if you've not done a lot of that before. I think it opens a lot of writers' eyes, and not just writers, other folks who happen to get interviewed. It opens people's eyes a lot to how they're viewed by others, what impressions they might be conveying that they don't know about.
Right. So, you know, you might want to get a friend or a partner to videotape you on the phone speaking.
Yeah.
See, you know, so you don't have any of those nasty surprises when you do the real thing.
Sure, sure. I'm wondering about your influences, the writers that you read, and if you could tell us anything about the particular books, particular writers who have fed your imagination.
Wow. Well, I love Ann Padgett, and I've read just about everything that she's written. I'm not necessarily saying that she influenced my book, but I do really love her. I love some craft books like Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, which is I recommend to everybody who writes. I'm trying. My very favorite book is Charlotte's Web. Because it's about friendship and writing, right? So maybe that influenced my book. I don't know, subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some wonderful writers out now. And this is not in the realm of influencing, but Beneficence by Meredith Hall I just finished, which is a great book. Blow Your House Down, Gina Frangello, Lady Parts, Deborah Kopakin, because I'm writing memoir now, so that's basically what I'm reading.
Sure.
Is memoir.
Yeah. A lot of writers I've talked to, and again, I will put myself in the category of folks who do these things, go looking for books that are in or near the genre that they're working on to look for inspiration. It sounds like you're one of those too.
Well, yeah, and now I remember my other favorite book was Anna Karenina, and that's about a woman who leaves her family, right? So,
yeah.
So maybe that's another subconscious influence.
Nobody got
hit by a train, though, in my book.
Right. Sure.
So.
Well, it's always curious to me how many influences a writer has that they don't recognize. Certain experiences that maybe you've suppressed or haven't thought about somehow find their way into your narrative and can even inspire characters. Do you suppose any of that happened in your case?
Oh, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to pinpoint. There are characters in my book who are composites of other characters. There are things that there are a couple of characters in the book who are children, and I put some of my kids' words into their mouths, things like that. But and then, you know, others are just people you think up, you know, but then realize maybe later on, oh, you know, so-and-so was like that. But it was a lot of it is subconscious, I think.
Sure. Okay. Again, bouncing around a little bit, you talked about having taken some classes on writing through the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, and you learned, among other things, about the value of an inciting incident. I'm wondering if there are any other lessons that you learned from that process that helped you getting So Happy Together to press.
Well, I think part of it is being surrounded by other writers. You know, it's not necessarily what the class may be about, the workshop. It's having input from other writers and that shared experience, which is just wonderful. So for any writers out there who are not yet members of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, I highly recommend it. I just found it so supportive, mm-hmm. and continue to find it so supportive. And I eagerly look forward to the emails from the Alliance, because there's always something I can learn or a workshop I can take. In fact, right now I'm taking a workshop with Alyssa Altman, a memoir workshop, who is she's a wonderful writer and a wonderful teacher. And I've read her memoir Motherland, which is just great. And so, you know, you never know who you're going to find, right?
Right.
You're going to find your developmental editor. You're going to find your your next workshop leader. You're going to find supportive authors and friends.
Mm-hmm. I will second your endorsement of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. I am a member, and I am happy to get their emails. I'm not happy to get emails from all the folks where I'm a member or participate to some degree with an organization. But with MWPA, it seems like you see a lot of ideas about what books work, about how to mm-hmm. promote books, about mm-hmm. how to build a community of authors that you can learn from and share with, and things like that. It sounds like those are all lessons that you've learned, things you've observed as well.
Right. It's my community.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, along with my sister authors that she writes press.
Sure.
That's my writing community now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lessons learned about your writing that you're using on the memoir that you're putting together now. Can you point us to any of those?
Lessons learned. I guess, again, I'm going to go back to the publicity and marketing lessons I've learned, because I'm going to be much more prepared next time. Really, seriously, I didn't know what hit me after the book was published. And I had, you know, I had a couple of wonderful launches. One at, they were both through Zoom, but one through Left Bank Books here, our bookstore here in Belfast, mm-hmm. and the other at Print in Portland. And they were wonderful experiences. I had friends, I had family, I had some of my fellow authors attend, and it was a real high, right?
Sure.
And then it was a lot of work, you know, leading up to that, and a lot of preparation. And then after that, as you know, most books are published on a Tuesday. It's just some kind of traditional thing. Hmm. And then by the next Tuesday, there's a whole other round of books.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you feel like chopped liver. So I need to be, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's a little bit of a postpartum thing.
Yeah.
You know, you've had this book baby, you've given birth to this book baby, and then what?
Right.
You know, and the then what is the publicity and marketing,
sure.
which I'm going to be much more prepared for with the next book, if in fact it gets published.
Sure, sure. Let's talk about the book launch for just a minute. Did you personally arrange for those, or did your publicist or your publisher make that happen? And can you tell us anything about the challenges involved in getting a book launch to take place that you were happy with?
Sure. So the first book launch, as soon as I knew that She Writes Press had accepted So Happy Together, I ran into Left Bank Books, where I've been a customer for many years, and I said, will you do my book launch? And they said, sure. Little did we know that COVID was going to come along, and that book launch, you know, I had attended so many book launches and book events in person, and they were so wonderful, you know, at Left Bank Books, and I was kind of envisioning that for me. Of course, it didn't happen, and so there were a lot of technical difficulties and figuring out, you know, I had to line up a tech person, and we had to figure out, you know, one person was at Left Bank Books, and I was in my house, and that was the one actually that Caitlin interviewed, my publicist interviewed me, so she was in her house, and, you know, and everybody was on Zoom, and I didn't even know who was there, because I forgot to click on the gallery view, you know? So I didn't even know who was there to thank, you know, for being there. But, and then the ones through print, the bookstore in Portland, was arranged by my publicist. Mm-hmm. And it was a little easier because I didn't have to worry about the details.
Sure. The one in Portland at print, you were able to, it sounds like you just could show up and participate and enjoy it. And
Pretty much. And I was interviewed by my developmental editor, who mm-hmm. we become friends. And yeah. So that was a lot of fun, too.
Very nice. It sounds like the process for you has been enjoyable and gratifying, both.
Yeah, I think where I am right now is, you know, the contract with the publicist is over. You know, it was a 6-month contract, and I'm kind of on my own. Unless I want to, you know, I have the option to sort of write another contract on a, you know, as needed basis, but I don't have the connections that she has, and I'm having to sort of seek out my own avenues of publicity now mm-hmm. and marketing.
Yeah,
so that's a little harder.
Yeah.
Particularly when I'm writing and, you know, trying to write another book as well.
Sure. The avenues that you are pursuing right now, do they include any social media? Is that part of your program?
Yeah, I'm kind of a technophobe, and my 13-year-old grandson had to set up my Facebook author page. So Facebook is really the only social media platform I have right now, and I'm debating Instagram and some of these other kinds of things where, you know, it's all kind of an unknown for me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think for a lot of writers find that as a challenge, how much of themselves to reveal, how much to focus on the book itself versus how much to focus on the author versus how much do you focus on extraneous subjects that may be of just general interest.
Right. And actually, when I was working with a social media consultant, and she was posting for me on my, and now I have to do my own posting, but she was posting for me on my author page, she said like 80% of the stuff that needs to be posted should not be about your book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the book took place in the 60s, so she did a lot of sort of 60s little musical snippets and things like that, which are fun, which mm-hmm. I guess get people to follow you.
Sure.
You know, I'm sort of, it's hard for me to wrap my head around this idea of followers, you know, and clicks and this kind of stuff, and clicks as in clicks, like how many clicks did you get on Amazon? You know, I'm still trying to figure that out.
Sure.
And you know, and how to post upload a YouTube video, and so it's all something I didn't know I was going to have to sign up for.
Sure. If I look at the advice that your social media consultant gave to you, and I try to figure out the thinking behind it, it sounds like there is some focus on themes from your book that might be of interest to people that would draw them in.
Right.
And done in a way that is entertaining and enlightening. Right. That sounds like a strategy that, at least in your case, somebody has said, yeah, do this because we think
it
works.
Right, and it seems to be working, and at least in terms of how many people, you know, clicked on that whatever, in terms of the numbers. And, I mean, you want to get people to like you, as, you know, as a person, kind of, even though they don't know you, so that they'd want to pick up your book.
Right. And getting folks to like you without sounding like you're emotionally needy, that's got to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you like me. You really, really like me, right? Exactly. And so that's why I hesitate, you know, asking people to write reviews and things like that. It's tough, you know. But, it's just... this is the reality of trying to sell a book.
Right. It's a challenge, and you've got to do some trial and error. And certainly, we all will make some mistakes and learn from them and maybe do better with our next book. Tell me about the blog tours for a minute. How did that work, and how did you enjoy it, and did you get the impression that it was an effective way to get your message out and to get folks interested in your book?
I actually did enjoy it. Once I was accepting the whole idea that I had to do the, you know, send this out to strangers and have them write about my book, and didn't know whether they were going to like it or not, and what if they hated it, and then all of their thousands of followers were going to hate my book. You know, I went through this whole thing in my head, and I just, you know, because I know that I've had friends review my book, and I've had friends give feedback from friends, but sort of to put it out there for strangers, as most of your readers are going to be, was kind of a trip, you know. And what was really gratifying was, oh, they got it. You know, they understand what I was trying to write about. So that was nice.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the blog tour, you're basically putting together a piece of writing that goes on somebody else's blog as a guest contributor.
No, that's one way of doing it.
Okay.
I had done that too. But this one was, you put your book out there, people decide they want to read it, and they want to write about it on their blog.
Okay.
So basically, they're reviewing it on their blog.
Okay, all right.
And I had 12 people do that, and that was something you pay for.
Gotcha.
But when you do a guest on somebody else's blog, when you do a guest essay on somebody else's blog, which I've also done, that's not something you pay for.
I gotcha. Okay. And the mechanism for getting attention by folks who do blogs, was that a commercial service of some type, or
how did
that work? Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm blanking right now on the name of the service, but there are a bunch of them out there. If you just Google book blog tours, you'll find it.
Okay, and at least in your case, you found that as an effective way to get folks to read your book and post reviews on Amazon and Goodreads.
I did. Mostly they posted on Goodreads, but because they would write something, and if it was a favorable review, then they, you know, you always have comments on your blog. So they had a lot of comments from their followers saying, oh, I love this period of time, or, you know, the 60s. I love books about the 60s, or this sounds like something I'm really going to read. So that was very gratifying to me.
Yeah.
You know, whether they actually read it or not, I have no idea.
Sure,
but.
Sure. And among the comments from reviewers among the comments you got from the reviewers, the blog folks, and even their followers, there must have been some moments where you realized that folks were taking things away from your book that you hadn't realized that they might.
Yep.
Can you give us any examples of how that
works? I'm blanking on that. I can't. But
okay.
I think when you look at a painting, it's in the eye of the beholder, right? And I think the same thing is true with readers. They will take out what they relate to, and they may see something completely different than something you wrote.
Sure. I will make a confession. With my first novel, the main character was very profane, and he dropped the F-bomb very often. And I discovered during the process of looking over reviews that I'd gotten that folks don't generally like books with a lot of profanity. It hurt a little bit to realize that, having put a lot of profanity in the book. I'm wondering if you learned any comparable lessons, anything that you might have picked up in the way of
guidelines.
Well,
my character came of age in the 60s, and in terms of speech patterns and profanity, it's in there. And I haven't had anybody say, anything about it. Yeah. So, you know, obviously there are certain people who are not going to pick up this book. And it's interesting because the back of the book, the blurb on the back of the book, oh, I have to, here's a little story.
Sure.
So Amazon puts you in categories, you know, when, you know, family stories or romance or historical, blah, blah, blah. So I was very shocked one day to open my page on Amazon and to find out that Amazon had put me in historical erotica, which freaked me out no end. And so I had to go through all this. I had to go to my, contacted my publisher. She told me how to, who to contact at Amazon and how to get that changed. It was a long process.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that the reason they put me in historical erotica is the blurb on the back of my book, which starts out, set in the sex, drugs, and rock and roll 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, and, you know, that's what everybody says about the 60s, right? And that's
right.
What it was.
Yeah.
So, but that's why then I got pigeonholed as historical erotica. We did change that. And,
sure.
You know, it's now family and divorce stories. But there are certain stories, there's certain genres that some people won't read.
Right.
And, you know, and if they don't want to read this, then they have a whole lot of other books they can read.
Yeah. And it also says something about how the blurb that you put in the back of your book creates impressions that you might not expect.
Right, right. I thought I was being a little, you know, I don't know. Setting the story. And I didn't realize that I was going to be, as I said, put in that category.
Sure. Did you write the blurb yourself, or did your publisher do it?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Most authors I talk to, if they didn't write it themselves, they had a very big hand in how it worked out. So that seems pretty common.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Deborah K. Shepherd, author of So Happy Together, which was released in April of this year. I want to thank you for taking the time to visit and to talk. I feel wiser and more enlightened than I was a few minutes ago, and have enjoyed it very, very much. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so glad. And if you would like more information, your listeners would like more information, I do have a blog. It's DeborahShepherdWrites.com. And also an author Facebook page, Deborah K. Shepherd, author.
Wonderful. Okay.
Okay.
Very well, Deborah. Again, thank you, and best of luck with your memoirs.
And best of luck with your books.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Deborah K. Shepherd is the author of So Happy Together, a book published in April 2021 by She Writes Press. So Happy Together is a novel about a woman stuck in a stultifying marriage that's unraveling and is mourning the loss of her creative self. She has a dream about an old lover and goes on a road trip in search of what she once had and maybe what she once was.